is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I'm John Batchelor. The administration, using the semiconductor subsidies, reads the Wall Street Journal editorial, to impose much of the social policy that was in the failed Build Back Better bill. In these last days, Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo rolled out the new rules for chip makers and summed up the politics to the New York Times. The quote, "If Congress wasn't going to do what they should have done, we're going to do it in implementation." The context here is the $280 billion CHIPS Act, which the Republicans joined to pass and the president signed. So it looks like a bipartisan success, or is it? I welcome Veronique DeRougie of the Mercatus Center, writing about industrial policy and the $280 billion CHIPS Act. The context here also is that we're in a contest with the People's Republic of China, and nearshoring or friendshoring or onshoring chip makers is part of the contest. Moving into India, moving to Mexico, but especially moving to the U.S., protects the high end as well as the parts of the chip making that go in our ordinary machinery. Veronique, a very good evening to you. The Microchips Act was a success for both parties, much ballyhooed, the president signed, a lot of celebration, paper hats, etc. But in there is this twist. Implementation of what? What is the Commerce Secretary addressing? If Congress won't do it, we're going to do it. Good evening to you.
Good evening. So the CHIPS Act was praised as a bipartisan effort, but the truth is, like, it's only 16 Republicans who signed on to the act, and that's because they thought that the Inflation Reduction Act was dead. But in any case, there were some Republicans who voted for this act. So there were, in particular, $50 billion of subsidies going to the chip manufacturer to build new factories in order to increase the supply and to make the U.S. more self-sufficient on this front and not depend exclusively on foreign providers. What is new is that the Commerce Department has actually announced now that, oh, by the way, Intel and all you guys who want to tap into those subsidies, we forgot to tell you that there are a bunch of things you're going to have to do if you want this money. And among other things, you're going to have to provide high quality childcare, whatever that means. You're going to have to share with the government your unanticipated profits. And that means that the government is going to have to monitor your profits. So you're going to have to do all sorts of disclosure along the way. Oh, and by the way, if you're going to be getting this money, you can't do any stock buyback, no matter what your reasoning for doing it. So they've come up with all these things that are going to be really constraining to the companies, to the point that there are people who are wondering whether actually a lot of the companies are going to utilize those subsidies and go forward with the plans to build more factories.
What is the difference between industrial policy, as you just outlined, and central planning?
There's not. Central planning is basically everything the government does that's top down. There's a version of central planning that is very exhaustive. It's just, you know, think about the Soviet Union, where the government claims it's going to reorganize the entire economy. And then they're just industrial policy is something that's a smaller form of central planning, where basically is going to focus on particular industries, you know, the semiconductor manufacturing, like, and kind of try to achieve goals like this by trying to incentivize usually the private sector or like the government stepping in to do things to achieve a certain industrial goal.
The puzzle also, childcare, I understand, is an added bonus for some people when they work in Silicon Valley. I've heard of it before. I've never heard of it mandated. If you don't do this, and if you're not up to our standards, then you won't get the subsidies. But this idea of sharing profits, That's a mind twister. What are they thinking? Sharing profits?
I mean, it's unclear. I mean, I only know what I've read, and it's not clear that they anyone knows how this is going to function, really, and how it's. I mean, in my opinion, it's not gonna work well. In part because companies still have the possibility to just not take the subsidies and just find the financing somewhere else. Which, by the way, one of the reasons why you and I have talked in the past why I thought the CHIPS Act was so bad is because there's no evidence that the semiconductor industry is actually not doing well and is not racking in really big profits. And there's also a lot of evidence from the past, but also kind of industry people are saying, you know, all the constraints and requirements, even before these, that are going to be put on those companies to build the factories, mean that it's going to take a long time. And the product that they will have set up to produce may be completely outdated when it comes out. It may be not lucrative. I mean, we've seen this with the industrial policy on semiconductor in the 80s and the 90s. In this case, it was with Japan, where the big battle was on that DARM whatever thing, and that there was a company or a conglomerate of companies that was subsidized just to beat the Japanese at this, and they never really fully succeeded. More importantly, what happened is the semiconductor industry in the 90s, actually the most lucrative and fast growing part of the industry, was totally not in that technology anymore. And so that's one of the big problem with industrial policy, is that it actually looks back. It says, at this moment of time, this is the product where we're competing on. And it basically kind of get capital stuck in one path, which you don't even know whether 5 years down the road, a year down the road, certainly 10 years down the road, will be even a part of the discussion, because other innovations will have come online.
The Wall Street Journal notes that part of the requirement is wraparound services, whatever that means. And they give an example: adult care, transportation assistance, housing assistance. This is astonishing. The list is going to grow. Is that our understanding? The companies don't know what the government will be regulating.
Yes. I mean, and this is the thing. So Biden administration is actually has done this a lot, which is, they can't pass a bill through Congress. And I think the Wall Street Journal article said that. And then they basically use, like in this case, the CHIP Act, or in the infrastructure spending to say, you know, we're going to impose Buy Americans and use unionized workers requirements for you to get the subsidies. So they're kind of trying to do a lot of social stuff. Through bills that are supposedly industrial policy bills. And by the way, this is one of the reasons why industrial policy often fails, because politicians not only often miscalculate the direction where the industry is going because they can't foresee innovation, but it's also because they just can't help themselves, and they attach requirements that actually increase the cost so much that it's counterproductive to the effort they're trying to put in place.
The quote from the Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, again from the Times: if Congress wasn't going to do what they should have done, we're going to do it in implementation. Veronique DeRugier of the Mercatus Center. I'm John Batchelor.
What happened to her, Mario? How could she simply disappear after she was with you?
I don't have answers for that.
48 Hours at CBS News present.
I'm just going to ask you straight out. Did you kill Christy Wilson?
No, I had nothing to do with her disappearance.
Another season of My Life of Crime with Erin Moriarty. Award-winning correspondent Erin Moriarty brings you face-to-face with killers.
Uh, I, I will never say that I'm a cold-blooded killer. I'll never say I'm a murderer.
And the people they took from.
My son died running for his life.
This season, follow the evidence with Aaron, beyond the speculation, including in the death of boxing legend Arturo Gatti.
My gut says I don't think he would take his life.
I know my husband killed himself.
Listen to My Life of Crime from 48 Hours on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mo Rocca, and it's been a while. But I've been busy digging up even more stories about the people and things of the past that are fascinating me now.
What did your father think of the label, of the whole idea of the Latin lover?
From the screen idols who redefined Hollywood's leading man.
I think it was a love-hate relationship. My dad hated the word macho.
That's what I call the Latin lover type of a role, which is one-dimensional.
To the dog who introduced millions of kids to classic literature.
I remember, like, on my 10th birthday, I think it was, we were going to go mini-golfing, and I insisted, but we had to stay home for Wishbone first.
Listen to Mobituaries wherever you get your podcasts.
Now to exclusive reporting from CBS News.
Join Gail King, Tony DeCopel, and Nate Burleson for original reporting. CBS Mornings, weekday mornings on CBS.